Hey, what's up, and happy new year. Welcome everyone to the Rethinking Youth Ministry podcast, where each week, almost, I guess not each week because we just took a couple weeks off, but most weeks, we hope to raise the bar for youth ministry by asking some questions, interviewing thinkers, having some real and honest conversations about what it looks like for us to lead the next generation. I am Brett, and today I am so excited to be joined by Ashley.
Hey!
Charlie.
Hey, friends.
And Tyreek.
Hey, what's going on?
This is Tyreek's first episode with us, so Tyreek, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do.
Yep, so I'm married. I have two kids, Tyson and Jordan. My son just turned five. I'm sad because that means he's going to start school. A little girl who's three. She's amazing. And I do youth ministry at North Point. I work for Transit, which is our middle school ministry. And it's so much fun.
And at some point, Tyreek, when your daughter goes to school, you'll be a little less sad and probably a little more excited. Like, oh, yes, finally, they're all in school.
No, I really feel like I'm going to be that dad that works from the parking lot of the school. they'll just be like, oh, is Mr. Wesley in his car? Yep, that's him on his laptop, just typing away. I'll get used to it, though, maybe. I don't
know. The police officers all know you by name.
Right, yeah.
Like, oh, no, that's just Tyreek. There's nothing to worry about.
Yeah, he just misses his kids. Should have homeschooled.
He used to be a school teacher, so he knows what goes on, you know? Okay,
that's true.
I was just thinking I just met another helicopter parent, so we're good.
Listen, helicopters unite.
Yes.
No bumps and bruises. I mean, they need them, but I don't like
it. It's hard.
Well, this is not an episode about helicopter parents. So we're going to transition here. Today, we're going to be talking about this idea that sometimes we kind of get in our minds, or other people put in our minds, of I'm just a youth pastor, and kind of some of the other lies that go along with that. So we're going to chat. We're going to get maybe a little bit vulnerable about some of the struggle that I know that I have felt when it comes to this idea of what has God called me to do, and what does that look like, and the way that ego and our mind, like just the way that all of that kind of comes in to things. So the first thing that I want to ask, though, is because we've probably all had an experience like this. So tell me one of your just a youth pastor experiences. So one of those times where somebody else says something to you that just does not understand and get youth ministry, that kind of made you feel either mad, angry, or like 10 inches tall.
Like, you are you meaning like when people just call you, oh, you're a Sunday school teacher.
Yeah.
That's what you do for a living? Oh, but you only work on Sundays, right?
Right.
So, wow, you must be bored the rest of the week.
Yeah, I was just going to say, what do you do for the rest of the week?
I know. We just teach Sunday school.
I definitely got that question. But they're like, is that a full-time job?
Yes.
Or are you like, you make enough money for like everything you do?
Yeah.
Or what else do you do? So yeah, I've definitely seen that before.
Yeah, some of those for me would come from the kind of compliments that you tend to get are kind of backhanded compliments when they come from adults. Mm-hmm. Like I remember teaching kind of in big church, you know, which I would do every now and then. And adults, like, I think they mean well. They're trying to compliment like, hey, you did a good job. But it comes out like, I didn't know you could speak to adults and mm-hmm. not just teenagers. Like yeah. You put multiple sentences together in a way that communicated information in an engaging way. I didn't know you could do that.
I was like, when they say, oh, this is really great, but when are you going to be a real pastor
yeah.
soon? Or is that what you want to do? Like, when will that happen for
yeah.
you? Never.
Oh, yeah, I've had that.
Right?
For sure.
Definitely.
My coworker at the time, he was getting ready to leave because he was going to be a real pastor. And he was like, well, I hope they take you seriously because I think people just look at you and think you're the fun person. And I was like, well, okay. Is that a compliment? I mean, I was like, the seven in me was like, yeah, I'm fun.
Right?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it always felt like you were babysitting too. Like I always feel like they felt like you were a babysitter, right?
Right?
Mm-hmm. Like they was like, oh yeah, go stand with Mr. Tyreek, go over there, and then they don't come over and say hi. It's just drop
yeah.
the kids off, and he got you. All right, I'm out.
Yeah,
that would
yeah.
be the lowest paying nannying job in the world.
Yes,
yeah,
for the hours we put in, absolutely.
Yeah.
So along that same idea of like just youth pastor, what are some of the other lies sometimes that we tell ourselves that we believe, or that maybe we read into things that other people are saying to us that they don't necessarily say, but that's the way that we take it?
I think one thing that I felt when I was a youth pastor was like, I have to be all things to all children.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a really cool situation where like I was a youth pastor and I was over high school, middle school, and elementary school. But the high school was really unique in that we had students that lived in a group home, and then we had these students that went to like private school. So
yeah.
it was a really great dynamic. But my students that lived in a group home had really life issues that they had to deal with. And so I remember feeling like I have to be the answer to all these kids' problems because I'm the one that's here. I'm the one that's representing Jesus in their life. And it just created this huge burden that I wasn't sure I was even meant to carry or carried in that way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
It's so good.
What else? What are some of the other lies that we convince ourselves of sometimes?
I think the first thing that comes to mind for me is it's one thing to be a youth pastor, and then it's another thing to be the middle school pastor. Because it almost feels like the middle school pastor is a step down from the youth pastor or the student pastor. So it's not just like this stigma associated with students. There's this like other layer being middle school, and then a whole other layer being a female, you know? And so, I mean, the whole, you know, tension of being a female in youth ministry in general, it's such a male dominated, you know, field. And so really believing that you belong there and wondering if other people see you that way when you don't really know where they stand theologically on that.
Yeah.
And so wondering, do I really know what God's call is on my life? Because if these other pastors are saying it's unbiblical, like, have I misunderstood that? Or is that really his call?
Yeah.
No. Oh my gosh. You guys, was that terrible? Because you were
It's so true though.
Yeah. Like I feel that tension always being a middle school person as well. And even though I hired the high school guys or guys, high school gals, whatever that position, I get what you're saying that you're the middle school person. Well, do you want to move up or, you know, is this where you're going to be?
It's almost like you can only lead the youth ministry as a whole from like the high school position.
Correct.
But very rarely is it led from the middle school position.
Yeah, there are some really interesting structural things when it comes to that in just in general in ministry and in the ways that those things tend to play out. So I know one of the lies that I always struggled with kind of came from this idea that we know that we don't have an unlimited amount of time with all of our students. And so I would always wrestle so much about trying to over communicate everything all the time, especially younger in ministry. I would put so much pressure on myself. Like I would see students come in for the first time. And in my mind, I'm like, I don't know if this person's ever going to come back. Like, how much do I need to make sure that they hear today? And it's just an unfair pressure to put on yourself. And really, it's not a very strategic one either. But those are kind of some of the lies, some of the pressures that I know that I let guide probably too much of my ministry when I was younger.
Yeah.
I also was thinking about the pressure we put on ourselves where you teach students truths and then they make choices in life and you're like, oh, I feel like a failure or like that reflects bad on me or you know what I mean? It's kind of cloudy.
No, but words
like
to
you
say
take,
it,
like you take on their decisions that you had a hand
we
in.
We did something wrong because I made a bad choice.
Right, which is not true at all. Nope. They are human beings with their own individual minds.
Yep.
I think one thing for me that I thought, it wasn't a long thought, but it's like there's this idea that you have to be cool to be in youth ministry, right? And so you think that's the way you dress or the way you talk or whatever, but like cool and relevant aren't the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think when I think about the people that spoke it to me the most when I was a student, they weren't cool. They were people that were committed to me. They loved me and they listened to me.
Yeah.
And so I think sometimes we go overboard with being cool, but we're not relevant because we're not committed and loving and trying to understand their world.
Yeah. Chef always quotes Duffy. And I love this quote that young people are going to, what is it? Young people are going to connect best with the oldest person in the room who takes them the most serious, something along those lines.
Yeah.
But I used to always tell older people that when talking about youth ministry, like, I'm a little too old for that. I don't think it could ever work for me. But like, listen, they're not looking for just slightly older versions of themselves. They're just looking for people who want to be, who are authentic, who are who they are, who are truly engaged and interested in building a relationship with them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I got some more for y'all.
Yeah, go for it.
All right. Another thing that I struggled with when I was a youth pastor was that it had to grow fast. And so I was always like, I wasn't content with the kids that were there.
Yeah.
And I would always focus on them. Like, y'all need to invite your friends. Y'all need to bring people. And when they didn't, I was discouraged. And when I got older, I began to realize like, okay, it's not about the size. It's about the quality of youth ministry that we're offering. Mm-hmm. And if we offer something of quality, they will want to bring their friends too. And I think that little shift will save you a lot of like frustration and feeling bad about yourself. Cause it's like, man, I literally only have four kids today, but if you're planning and you are doing what, preparing for however many kids, but those four kids had an amazing time, you did what you were supposed to do. Mm-hmm, and that's, yep. I think, taking that pressure of size off of you and realizing that, like, okay, if God's put these students in front of me, I need to make the best youth ministry possible for these students to have an amazing time.
Can yeah. I amen that? Yeah. Like 100 times over. Yeah, that's
ready,
so true.
Go.
Amen.
No, you said 100 times.
Oh, sorry.
I think another one that I've caught myself thinking many times, especially earlier in my career, was when, in the effort of partnering with parents, feeling like I wasn't old enough to like have those kind of conversations with parents. Like I felt like, do they take me serious? Because I don't have kids. So why would they want to listen to what I say? Or why would they want to have a conversation with me about this? And so I think that because I was thinking that way, I actually shied away from some of those relationships way more than I should have as I look back on that.
All right. So we've kind of shared all these things. I'm sure we could keep going around about these stories that we've either felt or kind of have been impressed on us of how we're just youth pastors. But where do you think these kind of things come from? Where do you think these thoughts come from? Where do you think these expectations come from? Why is this the issue that it is in student ministry?
I think some of that comes from senior leadership in your church.
Okay.
That you often don't have a seat at the table when you're the youth pastor. Yeah. You might be the last to know everything. You're like right there with the person who, you know, cleans the floors. And you, I don't know what else to say, but I have cleaned the floors before. That was part of my job. But I think a lot of that is pressed upon us. And even if it's not intentional, it is very felt.
Yeah.
One of the things, too, I think, is that because we live in this social media era, like we see other youth ministries that look like they're doing amazing things.
Yeah.
And our little corner of the world doesn't reflect that at all. Whether that's size, whether that's, because I didn't start at North Point, right? And that's a huge ministry with all the lights and all those things. And I remember before I worked at North Point, I worked at another church and we didn't have that. And I remember looking at Instagram or whatever and I'm like, man, if we just had a bigger budget, if we just had a bigger building or whatever.
Lights, smoke, anything.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think when you're always comparing your ministry to someone else's ministry, I think that can lead to frustration, that can lead to self-doubt, that can lead to the questioning if you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Period.
I think sometimes they come from conversations that are meant for the good. Like when someone asks you, like, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Right.
And it's almost like if you don't answer with something like a different place than where you are now, it almost
looks
like you're not dreamy, you're not ambitious. Mm-hmm. And it's so rare to find somebody who's like, well, I'm actually doing my dream job. Like, this is exactly what I want to be doing.
Yeah.
And I think it comes also from the assumption that people assume you wouldn't want to stay there. So it's like these things that are projected on you. It's kind of like being single. People assume you don't want to stay there.
Yeah.
Like, they assume that you're waiting in a season and that you want kids and that you want to get married one day.
Yeah.
It never occurs to them. And it's just because of how the culture is that you may actually want to stay right where you are on purpose.
Yeah. And so sometimes the healthy thing is, even though the reaction to those things are probably like frustration and like we're hurt a little bit, the best thing is probably just to be able to brush it off and believe the best, like not ignorant in a mean way, but like, I just don't really think they fully understand what they're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I think some of it is the better I've understood the idea of call, I think that the healthier my inner dialogue gets with this kind of stuff. I think there's so many misconceptions about this idea of being called a ministry, especially when we're talking about kind of, you know, full-time vocational working at a church kind of ministry, is that we assume that, you know, when we feel that call to ministry, that God then reveals, hey, this is what you're supposed to do in ministry for the rest of your life. And for me, I got to a place where I really kind of had to hold call with open hands. And the kind of language that eventually I put to this is, wherever my gifts and my passions kind of align with my opportunities. And when I was 23, that looks a little bit different than it does when I'm 34 years old. And when I'm 44 years old, maybe it's going to look a little bit different than when I'm 34. Maybe it won't, but maybe it will. And so to me, there always has been kind of that tension of, I resent that idea that you think that what I'm doing is somehow less than what other ministries are doing. But at the same time, I know in my heart that I don't know. Like, if someone says, what do you want to do in 10 years? The truth is, the answer might be that I'm not doing something specifically in student ministry, but that has nothing to do with the fact that I don't think student ministry is the worthy venture there, even though that tends to be where the question originally comes from. So if that made any sense, I think a lot of it for me was solved when I began to have what I would consider a healthier understanding of what does it mean for us to answer God's call into kind of this whole venture.
It's good.
I do think with all callings, you have to have an open hand. And I think that's kind of what you were communicating. It's like, in this season of my life, it may be me with elementary school kids and we're doing all kind of fun games. In another season, it may be me with high school kids and we're talking about dating and all this other kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But at the heart of it, it's like, I want to be open with my gifts. And if I have passion for students, like, that's where I'm going to be regardless of what that age looks like. Mm-hmm. And I think also there's this false belief that I think either you can hold as an individual or there's just something like in the air that we believe that you can age out of youth ministry as a youth pastor.
Oh,
like
once
you get to a certain age, it's like, you can't do this anymore.
I hope and not, because I think I'm getting close to that.
You don't look like it, girl.
Thank you.
Neither does Reggie Joyner. I mean, he's still doing his thing, you know what I mean? And so I think that's one of those things. I think it's a lie that we believe. Like, there's a certain age where you're no longer relevant or your voice can't reach these students. And it's not true. It's about commitment and who takes these kids seriously.
And I think that we can all probably look back to a conversation that we were having with someone, and that was their reason for not wanting to get involved in youth ministry. But we could also all probably look back, and Charlie, not you, Charlie. It was another Charlie.
Another Charlie. Okay.
But he's my example of that guy who, I mean, Charlie's in his early 70s at this point, and he's just absolutely unbelievable with students, and he cares about them, and he's genuine with them, and he's not trying to be somebody else. He's not trying to be, you know, 30-year-old Charlie. And so we probably all have those kind of people that had an impact on us that we've seen where it's like, you don't age out of this.
No, I know. I worked for this nonprofit one time, and the lady's name was Dr. Ann Wimberly, and she had to be in her 70s, and we were working with like younger high school students. So this is like freshmen, and I had never seen somebody who connected with students better than her in her 70s.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, these young men would be upset and angry, and she had this way of, like, diffusing their, like, emotions that were going on in them and, like, speaking to them in such a clear way that, like, broke them down in the most amazing way. And I think that's a missed opportunity if she thinks in her 70s that, like, oh, I can't reach these kids because I'm past this age. It's like, no, like, it was like, They looked at her like she was a grandma to them, but like what she said to them, you could tell like it brought life. You watch them stand up taller when she said something to them, or smile when she made them laugh. So it's definitely not, like, to your point, it's definitely not something that you age out of. It's like gifting, calling, and opportunity.
Yeah, and some of that does come down to misconceptions people have in general about youth ministry. That, to be honest, youth ministry culture has not helped break those misconceptions. Because when people think about, like, I'm too young for youth ministry, what they're thinking about is, like, I'm too young for lock-ins. I'm too young to get on stage and be zany. I'm too, you know, like, those are the kinds that they think of.
Zany.
And zany, right?
Well done.
Yes.
And they're not necessarily thinking about, like, oh, I'm too old to sit in a circle with a group of ninth grade girls and have some conversations about life. Like, that's probably just not what comes to their mind. And some of that is sort of on us as leaders of these ministries and helping people, you know, really understand, and are we leading from the stage or are we leading from behind the scenes? All those kind of questions to me kind of play into this. So what are some of the other cliches that tend to earn us this reputation sometimes, where people say, oh, you're just a youth pastor, or when are you going to move on to something different? Because we have to own some of this.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things, maybe our own stories, but maybe just also in general in youth ministry that we could help change the perspective?
Yeah. For me, I think it's two things that I'm thinking about. So before I was in North Point, when I was at another church, one thing that I felt like was that the parents didn't know what we were doing, but it always sounded like we were having fun.
Yeah.
And so it was like, all right, well, if you just have fun all day, like, this isn't, like, all right, y'all just back there playing. Like, y'all really not back there learning. Y'all not back there. Like, if you just want to throw VeggieTales on and throw on some Lecrae, then cool. Like, how is that a real job? So I do think part of that onus was on me of, like, not communicating with parents of, like, this is what we've been learning and all those other kind of things.
Yeah.
one of the things at North Point that I think I've experienced is like, I think North Point gets it. So other churches, maybe other leaders may not. And it's this idea that like, it's a serious thing. So like there's strategy, there's planning, there's all these logistics, like there's all this like real brain power and real brain work that has to happen to pull this stuff off. And like, we're very thoughtful about the things that we do to make sure that we get the influence that we want to have. And I think for some people, it's like, it don't take all that. Like, go and get you some candy and go and like the kids will sit down and be quiet and you'll watch whatever movie is that you want to watch. But it's like, no, like there is like real work and research and stats and all these things that we use to influence how it is we do what we do. And so I think that's something that if people don't know, it just looks like, oh, we just in there playing.
You know? I think that goes back to letting the parents and family know what your ministry is about. I remember planning my heart and soul into like a fall retreat. And parents were like, oh, I hope you had a great weekend away with the kids. And like, I've 6 months been planning this retreat, what we're going to speak about, writing devotions, talking with the worship band about how we're going to connect with students. But it was just a really great weekend away.
Yeah.
It's defeating sometimes.
Yes. Yeah. So going back to Brett's question, one of the things I thought of when you asked what causes these misconceptions was sometimes as youth pastors, we get into like a routine, especially if you've been in the same place for several years.
Yes.
And when you have like the same events, the same thing over and over, it almost becomes like white noise to your staff, to the people on staff with you, to the parents, even to students. They know what to expect. And it's almost like you're not reinventing. Mm. And so it does come across sometimes as lazy. I'm not saying we can't do the same things.
Right.
But I think that we need to work hard to continue making it better, not just keeping it afloat.
Yeah. Yeah. I know for me, I was 21 when I went into full-time ministry, which feels like a really long time ago. I didn't have any. I mean, I was a pastor's kid. I did 3 years of internships. I mean, I was quote unquote prepared, but I didn't know what I was doing. I was 21 years old. And I have this distinct nightmare, not a memory, of the first lock-in we did. I was there for a few months. All the kids were begging to do a lock-in. I was like, yeah, sure. We'll throw a sign up on the bulletin board.
Rookie.
We'll see how things, like 34 kids sign up for the lock-in. So we get a handful of parents to show up. 150 students show up to the lock-in. And I had four parents that were ready to. So, I mean, like I was as underprepared as possible.
Wow.
And so like, that was a lot of credibility. I had to spend years earning back with those parents. And some of it is just the reality of nobody's going to give a 22-year-old the senior pastor position at whatever church. So sometimes there is kind of this tension of youth ministry is just the first opportunity that most of us get. So even if we have this calling where we feel like at some point, I feel like I do really want to be a senior pastor. I really do want to do this or this outside of youth ministry. It's almost a completely different conversation to figure out, okay, but I'm 22 right now and that's not going to happen. How do I really honor where I am right now and not just use this as a stepping stone, but really kind of pour everything I can into where I am and learn what I can. But yeah, for me, lack of communication, which you kind of talked about earlier, and really just kind of lack of planning were two things when I was young that obviously gave a really bad name to student ministry in general and mine specifically.
I like what you said though about honoring the position and where you are, because when I have coaching conversations with young youth pastors, they're so quick to go to their next that they're not giving their all to the current place that they're at.
Even if their next is student ministry world.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. But they want to be at this different church or they want to do this kind of thing. And so I think that's always a tension that we probably all feel. Maybe some of that is an ego thing. You know, who knows what that is, but you know, it's so easy for us to think about what's next, what's the bigger thing, what's the better thing that we might do eventually, that it's hard to lose that, easy to lose that focus.
And it's a great way to lose volunteers because they see through it. You know, we always say what volunteers really want is you to own where you are right now, not just rent it. I mean, you know, the owner renter mindset. I always use my sister and I as an example. She lives in this like beautiful house that she's constantly fixing up and like planting bushes and redoing the kitchen. And I live in an apartment where there's not one thing on the wall. Like, I'm not fully unpacked. There's nothing on the wall. Like there couldn't be more of a contrast between us, but it's because she owns this house and she's making it better and she's investing in it. And I'm like, well, I'm not staying here.
Right.
So why would I try to make it better? I'm not putting anything into it.
Yeah. And I think One of the other reasons I think we have this misconception that we don't matter is that we're not in charge. Mm. And you know that your youth ministry is directly connected to the adult service, right? And so sometimes you sit there and you're like, man, if they just do this, like we could do this. And but it's like, but you're not in charge. So you don't get to make those calls and you don't get to, sometimes you may have influence, but at the end of the day, someone else is making the decision for how this whole thing is working. And I think that can make you feel like, oh, I'm just a youth pastor. Like, especially if you feel like you're not heard and your voice isn't heard, right? Because then it's like, well, I'm not going to make any suggestions at all. Because it's like, if you're not going to listen to me, okay, cool. Like, I just won't say nothing. I'm just a youth pastor.
And then we get apathetic.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like having two churches, right? So they have their church with adult service, and I'm going to do what I do over here.
Yeah.
And we don't even have to talk. But in actuality, the two have to work together to service the families.
Yeah. That's a great point.
All right. So it's the beginning of a new year right now. And let's say we've got somebody listening who is really struggling with this idea of like, the way that people talk about this ministry, the way that I'm kind of viewing this, just where I am right now, I just don't know if what I'm doing really matters. I just don't know if it's really kind of worthwhile. Should I be doing something different? Should I be looking for a role where I'm working with an adult, whatever? Like, what are some encouraging things that you would say, any of these lies that we've talked about, if somebody's really struggling through some of those, what are some encouraging things you would say to them?
I would say for me, like I remember being a student in student ministry, and I remember the lady who was basically like our small group leader. She was our youth pastor. Her name was Miss Sabrina, we called her. And she's just opened up her life to us, right? And to be honest with you, as a kid under Miss Sabrina's leadership, I really don't remember anything that Miss Sabrina told me or what she said to me. But what I do remember is that she loved me, how she made me feel. She loved me. I felt heard. I felt like I had somebody I can go and talk to. And that shaped my faith. Like, Miss Sabrina's discipleship is the reason why I work in North Point now. It's the reason why I went to seminary. It's the reason why I wanted to study religion when I went to college, because there was an adult who took my faith, who took me knowing about my faith serious enough to show up. And, you know, me and Miss Sabrina don't talk anymore, and she doesn't, you know, I don't see her on a daily basis, but I can't tell my story without telling about Miss Sabrina. And so I think for the people who are in those seats, it's like, if you can be committed and you do this thing with all of your heart, these students won't be able to tell their story of faith without mentioning your name. And so that's a huge privilege.
The encouragement, it's a long game.
Like, it's a long game.
we know it's not, I mean, I don't know how many times I leave a small group conversation on a weekly basis thinking like, what did, like, boy, that was a waste of time. Or like, did any of this matter this week at all? But we, you know, yes, I could talk about how what we talk about each week matters in some ways, but really it's just that, it's that relationship over time. It's the long game. So be encouraged that how you feel on a week in, week out basis is not the determining factor on the amount of influence and impact that you're having long term in the lives of students.
Absolutely.
I remember leaving youth groups and driving past Kroger and thinking, I would just love to go stock shelves.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But then the moments when the kids text you and the parents call you and they're like, I've just seen a big change in Johnny this week, and student baptisms. I mean, it is a long game, and it's so incredible to see God at work in their lives that I don't know why everybody just doesn't stay at the same church for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I really don't know that, but I just know that when you're there and you're truly invested in the position and the kids and the families, the payback or the big piece of that is, gosh, God changes them. Yeah. I just almost want to cry a little bit because you can see that, and that's a big part of it. And so when someone says, well, you're just a youth pastor, right? I don't really care anymore because I know that I've been a piece of that and I've seen God doing that. So,
And sometimes that speaks more to the lack of adults that they had pouring into their lives when they were teenagers.
No Miss Sabrina's.
Yeah. If that person never had that, then they don't know what to equate your actual role with.
Mm-hmm. They feel like you don't need it. Like, I'm an adult. Yeah. I didn't have it. I'm fine.
Yeah.
But my kids don't need that. But that's not true, right?
Like,
I think those moments, and I think another thing is that like you said, like, yes, it's a long game, but there's so many little moments along the way where if you pay attention, it's like, okay, they're getting it.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like being a teacher, right? Like, I was a teacher for 3 years, and it's the same type of thing. And you're in a position where it's like you're pouring out. And when your cup is empty, it seems like, okay, what's the point? Okay, y'all may never learn how to add. Like, what is going on? But then you get that one student who gets the homework back, and it's like, he did it. Oh my gosh. Or like you're in youth group and you're noticing that this one kid is helping stack chairs and he never did that. Or this one kid comes to you and he says, hey, me and my girlfriend are having trouble. It's like, these are your moments. Like these are the moments that you've invested in. But if you disengage, you're going to miss those opportunities and you're going to miss the payoff.
For any listener who's struggling with maybe feeling responsible for like the actions that their kids are choosing, I would say to remember there's a difference between what you're responsible with and what you're responsible for. And I think that was a huge lesson I had to learn because I cared so much. I cared like, I don't know if you can care too much, but I took on too much.
Yeah.
And so I had to keep reminding myself, like, first of all, I'm not their savior. That's not what I'm here for. I'm responsible with the time I have with them, with the people I put in their life. And that's what I'm responsible with, their time and what I teach them. But I'm not responsible for ultimately the decisions they make in life. The other thing I'd say is if you're struggling with confidence because you feel like other people don't value what you do, this is something I have had to work through and still work through, is your confidence has to come from within, not from the outside. Because if your confidence is based on what other people think or what other people say, it's like a constant struggle, an uphill battle. But if you can find a way to find your confidence from within, like, you know, you've put in the work, you know what you've done, and you don't need that to be affirmed by anyone else because you know it.
Yeah.
Then I think it's just a healthier mindset. And the last thing I want to say is if there's anyone listening who maybe feels discouraged being a youth pastor, like, I'm just a youth pastor. If we put it in terms of the military and you think about it, like, if there's a wall and the military's lined up and there's a break in the wall, they're going to send their best soldiers to the break in the wall. They're going to send their special ops teams, the military, to the break in the wall to help.
Yeah.
And when you think about humanity lined up and you think about each generation and you look at what's happening in culture, there's a break in the wall when it comes to our teenagers in this culture. And it's okay if you want to stay in youth ministry and you want to work with teenagers for your life, because we wouldn't call people who have no experience and no passion to rebuild that wall.
Right.
You would call the best, the most passionate, the strongest, the bravest, the most steadfast people.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what a group of youth pastors is, regardless of what anybody else thinks.
Yeah.
That's
good. Yeah, one of my encouragements would be, I mean, we've all probably heard a lot of those statistics of the vast majority of people who make a decision, you know, to follow Jesus choose to do so before the age of 18. And so in that same analogy, why would you not want your best possible people to be the one doing the influencing to people that are under the age of 18? And, you know, something that I know that I talk about a lot with youth pastors is the younger we are, the better we're in an opportunity to build healthy cycles, healthy patterns, healthy perspectives, healthy worldviews. That's really challenging to change patterns, cycles, worldviews, perspective in a 45-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And so how influential is the role that we get to have with kids and with teenagers, that we get to have an influence on those patterns and those cycles and those habits that they're building that are going to change the direction of the way that they have relationships, the kind of friends that they are, the kind of, you know, parents that they might be, or the kind of teachers that they might be, or the kind of doctors they might, you know what I mean? It just, when you set those things up, and we get to have a role in that. So that would be my encouragement to you, is what you are doing is vastly influential in ways that we don't understand. And we probably never will, because it is literally going to affect the rest of their lives.
Yeah. So I remember when Charlottesville happened, right? When Charlottesville happened in Virginia, and we saw those people with the tiki torches and all that kind of stuff. And I remember seeing how young those white men were. Mm. And I remember sitting there watching the TV, and I was like, man, whose youth group were they in that we didn't talk about race, or we didn't talk about treating people who look different than you with love and respect, where they felt like this was an option?
Yeah.
Like, what church were they in where they didn't feel like they belonged, so they feel like this was an option?
Yep.
And so for the people that I'm thinking about, is like, as you're in these ministries, like, you really do have a say-so. Maybe not a say-so, it might be a strong word, but you can influence how these kids become adults.
Yeah.
And like you said, with those worldviews and those practices, because how crazy would it be if because we doubled down and said, you know what, I want to be in youth ministry. I want to be a part of shaping these young minds to be better people and be, you know, better Christians in the world that want to love people. What kind of impact that you would have? You know, I think I can't remember if it was Andy Stanley or Reggie Joyner or someone who said, you know, they were talking about parenting and they said, it's not the job that you have. Sometimes the most important job that you have is going to be who, the child that you yeah. raise.
And they I think would probably both claim it's theirs.
Right, right, right. But I think it's the same thing for youth men, for youth people who work in youth ministry. It's like, it's not the church that you're at or the size of it. It may be the student that you led.
Yeah.
And I think having that mindset kind of can encourage you to be like, okay, even if I'm just influencing this one student, the rest of them can still catch something because I'm going to prepare for all of them.
Yeah. All right. So in our last few minutes, let's get really practical. So two questions. The first one is, when it comes to the reputation that sometimes we have in youth ministry that kind of causes some of these misconceptions, what do you think we can do to begin to adjust those misconceptions?
For people watching us? For people who maybe look at us and maybe like, oh, this is just a youth pastor.
Right.
I think we could be more vocal about the stuff that we actually do. And not in like a braggadocious kind of way, but be like, I think one of the smartest things we can do is sit parents down and be like, hey, this is the season of life your student is in. This is what you're experiencing.
Yeah.
This is, and like, if the more we can cast vision for parents and we cast vision for people who may not necessarily be in the ministry and how we benefit them and how it's going to benefit them as parents and benefit their students, I think they'll begin to see us as, okay, this is something that's really important.
Yep.
And you're not just a youth pastor, but like you're partnering with me as I'm trying to raise my kid.
Yep.
I totally agree with you about casting vision with the parents and things. But I also think we could stop soaking our socks in kerosene and trying to catch stuff on fire as youth pastors.
Did you do that a lot?
I did not do that, but I met a youth pastor.
Was that a stage game?
Who can
soak their socks in kerosene and set it on fire?
He was going to have a Viking funeral for the student's sins out on like a pond. And so he soaked the socks in kerosene.
Can we explain what a Viking funeral is?
Yeah, I didn't know that either. They put all their sins on paper and they put
A Viking funeral would be like when a Viking would die, they would kind of put him on this wooden raft, set it on fire and kind of push it out to sea. And then everything would just kind of burn.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
So this dude was like, I need to do that for these students' sins. It's going to be, I mean, he was in his first 2 weeks and it was going to be his glory moment, right? So he soaked
Sounds
his socks
epic.
In kerosene. And of course he had a bow with him. Do you not carry a bow with
I
you,
don't,
Brett?
But, you
okay.
Know.
And so then he launched it out into the lake and to get on the raft to poof up the sins.
And he missed it?
He did miss. But guys, I think thinking past, and I always say think past dodgeball and pizza.
Yeah.
But what we do is serious and it is life changing and it's not just flaming socks.
Yeah. So maybe the whole idea is having some wise people around you, having some better discernment.
Yes.
Because yes, there is that fun, adventurous side of youth ministry.
We love to have fun.
That is absolutely great. And we need to have elements of that.
Yes.
But we can't be reckless. We can't be, we can't.
Flamethrowers.
Yeah, we can't be unwise when it comes to those kind of things.
Yeah. Another thing I think you can do is like, you can recruit a lot of volunteers. I know one thing that I struggle with, because the church I was at before wasn't a big church. And one of the things that I think we use as a draw was that like, yo, you just drop your kids off, we got y'all. Like y'all go and enjoy church, we got y'all. And even we would have events, it was never like, hey, you guys come in and see what we're doing. It was like, drop your kids off, we got y'all.
Yeah.
And I think one of the best things you can do is create family events.
Mm-hmm.
Like where it's like, I'm gonna design something specifically for the whole family to participate. And I think that'll be another way where people to be like, oh, like y'all ain't just back there, you know, throwing Skittles at each other. Like y'all actually planning and y'all actually thinking through how my family can have fun together and all these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly what you're talking about with the planning piece, especially, I think two of the lowest hanging fruits that we can do with this is that we plan better and we communicate better with parents.
Yes. I agree with everything you guys just said. And on the other hand, I would say like, who cares if they think that? Like you know what you do, you know what you invest. And I mean, yes, we want to be good at what we do, but if they don't see it, that's okay.
Yeah.
Like you still know what you're doing for the kingdom.
So that leads to that next question that I want to jump into, the last one. So what can we do to change that inner voice? And so some of what you're saying is we just shift that perspective, is that even if there are people who don't get it, is that our measuring stick is not our reputation with other people, but our measuring stick is being faithful to what God's called us to do. Is that what I hear you saying?
Yeah, totally.
So what else? What are some other things? How can we change that inner voice for us to not feel these lies?
I think your relationship with God is important and you need to treasure that. And I think a lot of times in student ministry, is this bad to say, but I think it goes on the back burner, right? And being close to God and knowing his call on your life and the vision that he has for you and ministry is so important. And I think so. Sometimes we get so wrapped up in volunteers and families. It's like, God who, right? Yeah. And we don't keep up with that part. So staying close to him.
It's good.
I think also one thing that I still do is I have like a folder in my inbox that says encouragement.
Yeah.
So anything that's encouraging, it could be a text message from a parent or from a student or whatever. I screenshot it and I just drop it in that folder. And anytime that I'm feeling discouraged, like, oh, this all doesn't matter, I kind of going back in that folder and I'm like, oh yeah, this does matter. So it's like a healthy way of like reminding yourself that like some, it may not feel like it matters to everybody, but you are making a difference in somebody's life.
And I'd say again, just because somebody says something doesn't mean it's true.
Yeah.
You know, like what, regardless of what they think of you, it doesn't change who you are or what you're doing. And so I would just, I feel like I'm just constantly encouraging people. I wish somebody would have said that to me way earlier. And then I'd also encourage you to go to counseling.
Yes.
It's very helpful. Like as you start to learn more about who you are and what strengths you have, the more confidence you can find within.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think also with that, like that same mindset of like investing in yourself. Mm-hmm. I know one thing for me that helped was that like once I started reading about youth ministry and getting ideas from other stuff, it made me excited to plan. It made me excited to get in front of my students because it like the books and things made me feel like I wasn't alone. Like there's other people who are putting like time and effort and energy behind doing this well. And I think the more that we can read and learn from different people, the more exciting it'll be when we apply that to our students.
Well, it's been awesome to be a part of this conversation. And I'm sure that you all have some thoughts when it comes to how to break this reputation, how to kind of break these inner thoughts that oftentimes these lies we believe. And there's a couple ways we would love for you to engage in this conversation with us. One of those is our Facebook group, which you can find the link to in the show notes at rethinkingym.org.
And if you're a female listening and you work in youth ministry, we actually have a specific Facebook group for you called Rethinking Youth Ministry Women's Network. And you can find a link to that in the show notes as well.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. Tyreek, thanks for hanging out with us in your first episode.
Yeah, I had so much fun. I appreciate it.
All right. You guys have an awesome start to 2019 and keep those resolutions.
Happy New Year.
See ya.